Hello, and welcome to Distillery Sessions, the podcast from Distillery. My name is Peter Hoffer, and I am the host of today's episode. And today, I am joined by Jessica Thomas, founder of 10 Bear Group. Now, Jess is the founder and has extensive experience in social listening, strategy, and insights. She has advised across sectors, including finance, pharmaceutical, and retail, and was awarded silver at Goodman Lantern's Top 50 Women in Tech in 2018 for her work in the social listening space. So welcome, Jess.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Oh, so glad to have you.
Thanks very much.
So I guess to kick off, could you give a brief intro to you, your experience, and your role at 10 Bear Group?
Yeah, of course. So I'd actually worked in kind of commercial and strategic roles until I'd heard about social listening. It was about 6 years ago. Yeah, so I'd actually introduced it or tried to introduce it at previous roles, but obviously I had no idea about its proper capabilities, very little knowledge in the industry, etc. But obviously I was very interested in it, and I managed to land a job at Brandwatch. They are one of the market leading social listening consumer research platforms. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky to be surrounded by, you know, hundreds of really talented people who knew what they were doing in this space. And I spent my whole time there learning the platform, learning from the people who were doing the strategic stuff and all the account managers, et cetera. And so that I could become kind of fully competent. So I really, really loved working at Brandwatch. And they supported me when I went and started the business. And obviously that was 10 Bear Group. That was about 4 years ago. Initially, that was just me as a freelancer. But then obviously our clients grew. We evolved into a consultancy, etc. And so kind of the aim of the actual consultancy itself is to help people maximize their use of social listening and consumer insights internally. Sure. And my role there basically is just to, I focus mainly on the strategy piece because that's my forte. That's where I find I can deliver the most value. But obviously we have a really nice tight-knit group of consultants on there with varying skills in research, social listening and insights.
And do you find that, are there certain industries that are more, I guess, aware of social listening or more comfortable, or is it has it evolved so that it's actually across the board that people are interested?
It's quite funny because when we first started out, it was definitely kind of an enterprise thing. It was, you know, you had to have big money, you had to have investment in insights, etc. It definitely played to the smaller market, and I think the longer that this industry has gone on and evolved, it's much more accessible to everybody. I find that there are particular industries that really benefit from it more than others. So obvious ones such as, you know, CPG companies, any kind of business to consumer over business to business. However, it's all, you know, it's data. And at the end of the day, it's consumer insights. And if you don't have that kind of audience knowledge in your business, it's very difficult to kind of progress your company based on, you know, what people actually want, etc.
Now, I understand as part of your role in strategy that, you know, you and your team lead workshops to help clients understand, because, you know, with social listening, there could be loads of data, loads of insights that could be, you know, quite a lot to comprehend. So could you, I guess, talk me through of what these workshops are about?
Yeah, of course. So I think the whole idea for us was to kind of bridge that gap between getting insights about your consumers and then actually creating and implementing strategies that actually deliver a return on your investment. Yes. So for us, it's that disconnect that we're trying to bridge the gap with these workshops. And a lot of our clients, so we'll do a large part of research for them and a project in that case. But then what we actually do is take workshops to sit down with them and brainstorm all of the insights, how that's actually going to fit within their company, how we can develop an implementation framework to actually distribute those insights internally so that everybody gets value. At the moment, yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the problems at the moment is that social listening is siloed. So it's kind of, there is a key difference between kind of insights and strategy when it comes to data. And, you know, social listening has been siloed into kind of a separate thing to data and insights industry. Mm-hmm. When realistically, it should all be being used in tandem. The problem with insights is you offer observations that take action. You take action against them. So you'll see the term actionable insights. That floats around a lot. You'll see it on a lot of different companies, whether you're a social listening company or a data company, it's actionable insights.
Yes.
But really what we found was that there's a distinct difference between taking action against insights and then actually using those insights to feed wider strategies and deliver against your actual business goals. Mm. And that's kind of, these workshops move us past the whole post at this kind of day, at this time of day rather, at this time, at this place, etc. And it goes, why? Why do we post at that? How does that feed into the rest of the business? What kind of insight that can we take that goes beyond that, that actually gives us some understanding of the consumers that we're talking to, what their likes and dislikes are, their behaviors, etc.?
Yeah, I guess because, I'm sure many of our listeners will, know that experience of undergoing a great strategy or research project, at the end of the project, having a great deck or a strategic plan, but often it could just sit on, say, the decision maker's desk with the insights are not actionable. So I would assume that these workshops could help sort of make sure that the project itself, although the research has completed, that the findings aren't sort of stopped in its tracks.
Exactly. And I think, we actually spoke to a pharmaceutical client and they were getting these massive social listening research reports once a quarter. And I said, okay, so what are you doing with them? Well, we read them as a team. great. So, we take some of the insights out there and we put them into our marketing plan. I said, great, okay. And then what do you do with the rest of the really rich research that you've got, the insights into, your product development, your service development, what the wider industry is saying, etc.? Oh, we just read it and we take it in. And I was like, right, okay. What people seem to, they just kind of get the insights and they don't do anything with it. And the whole point, as you said, these workshops are literally there to make sure that people are actually getting a return on investment. They're actually making the use of those insights, they're distributed properly internally, and they are feeding a strategy. Because at the end of the day, you can't really have a strategy without having information, and there's no point in finding out insight and information without it actually having a longer-term goal within the business.
Indeed. No, it sounds like a win-win-win because, from your side, your hard work and research is validated. Your client contact shows that, their work is validated. And, if we think about the consumers, the customers, the fans who could be better treated by this research. So, I guess the workshops are just one big part of the puzzle.
Exactly. And it's all about, it's the final piece in the value puzzle, I would say.
Mm. So before we go any further, we've sort of bandied about the term social listening a bit, but could you define what you think your definition of what social listening is?
It's funny because we put social listening and digital consumer insights on our website because I do believe that they are two separate things. Social listening for me is the actual process of using social listening tools, listening to online data, online conversations, etc. Now, the digital consumer insights part of it is to not just stop at that social listening, it's to take into account the other consumer insights that you can have within your company, whether that's, chatbot data, sales data, etc. And it's making sure that, you combine the two. So, social listening is traditionally listening to those online conversations. But obviously, you can't just stop there anymore. It needs to go beyond that. There's only so much social listening can do. And if you don't put social listening in context of other data, then it's very easily skewed by the analyst's own interpretation. So whilst I do love the term social listening, and I think, it does exactly what it says on the tin, people often confuse the fact that there are other ways to get online data and consumer data that work to enrich the social data as well.
Yes, and I guess that goes back to your earlier point of, the challenge of this type of data being siloed, away from, say, other research tools that, could complement each other.
Exactly.
Now, what could brands or organizations typically learn with the listening and the sort of digital consumer insights?
I think the best way to kind of describe the benefit of social listening over other research methods is that it's the only place that you're actually going to get unsolicited opinions. So people just offer their opinions without even asking. You'd be absolutely shocked at how much information people share online. Like, I mean, we've got everyone's, people share about all their medical history and all about, their bank. Some people share their bank details. It's ridiculous. Obviously, that's not the information that we're interested in, but it just shows the kind of random data that's out there. And from a lot of research has done, especially when I was back in the day when I was doing commercial and business development, we obviously used insights to feed into the work that we were doing, but it was nothing like social listening or proper consumer insights. It was more kind of overarching industry market research, etc., and then individual research on the people we were talking to. So having social listening, not only does that give you that unsolicited opinions where, rather than having these horrible survey questions where it's formulated answers, it allows people to express themselves fully. But also, it's not meant to necessarily replace. And this is what people need to understand is that it's there to enrich. It's there to, to not just replace everything you're doing, but actually enrich what you're doing.
Now, I think perhaps for some people who are still perhaps unfamiliar with social listening, that this unfiltered language from people online could perhaps be a shock to the brand keepers. It's much different from being in a traditional focus group where you have a list of questions and the dynamics between you as the interviewer with your focus group subjects is going to be quite different from them being online. So have there been I guess examples of people who have been quite shocked or dubious or whatnot with social listening, and how do you sort of position that that reaction?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there is a bit of hesitancy, and I think it kind of boils down to control. So, brands seem to want to control what's out there. Which is obviously a benefit for a brand, but you can't control digital conversations. And I think that's what some brands need to understand is that, well, they can't control the conversation itself, but they can control how they engage with it. And it doesn't mean that you have to always be reactive. You can use social listening data to be, proactive in the way that you approach these things. By using the research and data and insights that you get out of that to shape your strategy for social moving forward, so that at least you've done as much as you can to control the situation because you know that the stuff that you're putting out is what your customers want because you've used social listening to do the research first. And then obviously, I think brands just kind of don't really understand how social data can benefit them beyond just brand tracking. And so they don't really understand the investment. So when you buy one of these tools and you're looking at a nice chunky investment for the software for the year, or you work with one of the agencies or consultancies like myself, you're looking at an investment. And I think what people view social listening as, or there's in certain industries, they view it as, oh, well, I can just track my brand natively through Facebook. Or I can just track I've got analytics on Twitter. And it's trying to get brands to understand that it's so much more than that. It's not just about your brand, it's about your competitors, it's about your products, it's about your industry, your audience, your market. And it's just trying to get them to open their eyes and see the possibilities. But generally, you know, once you can show them some really good, it's not for everybody, obviously. Some people have completely different goals in what they're after for that year. They don't necessarily have a consumer-led strategy built out for their business for the year. So it's not something high on their agenda. But once somebody realizes the value of social data, they seem to go really far with it.
I see. Now, one of the, I guess, continuing challenges for social listening is the evolution of language, just the way the consumers talk, just you know, different slang or even sarcasm or irony. How do you and your team sort of take that into consideration when you analyze what customers are saying?
I mean, Urban Dictionary is your friend. I'll tell you that. Urban Dictionary is, if you don't know what Urban Dictionary is, I recommend checking it out. It's a list of lots of different slang words, different ways, what their meanings are. And it's written by open source people. So it's very interesting. But actually, what we do, I'm a firm believer in kind of immersing yourselves in communities to understand them. And I remember when TikTok first came out, and obviously, if we're looking at generationally, it was a Gen Z thing at the time. It didn't really get popular with any older generations until sort of COVID, really, and lockdown. So when I first joined it ages ago, all of my friends and co-workers, well, not necessarily co-workers, but my friends were like, why do you have a TikTok account? That's for kids. But honestly, it's the best way to keep on top of everything. You have to be part of the community to really understand the nuances. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not just limited to social sites. It goes the same with Reddit, Tumblr, other forums. So what we make sure we do is that we are, not only do we research the slang as standard, as most companies would do, but we make sure that we're actually on the platforms, in the communities, engaging with the hashtags. I mean, I don't actually post anything on TikTok. I've never posted a video, but I have the app and I scroll through it regularly to make sure that I'm up on what the latest trends are, what the latest hashtags are, what the latest slang or acronym is, etc. So I think the best way for us on our end is, we do the research, but then we enrich that with actually joining in the community.
Yes, no, that actually fits into my next question about, you know, with social media, it seems that every week there are new channels, new trends, new ways to use current tools. So it seems like there's a lot of immersion, both with you and the team, of actually taking part in these communities.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, when we're trying to keep up to date with slang and nuances and things like that, that's probably the best way to do it. But ironically, when we want to keep up with industry news, such as new platform launches, new social media platform, a new feature on Instagram, we actually use social listening. So we write queries that alert us to any time there are new articles about new technology in that industry, new features on Instagram, etc. So we get notifications when that happens. Which, you know, without social listening, we'd have to be constantly searching on Google and making sure we're doing, you know, like an hour's worth of reading in the morning, etc. And now we just get all of our notifications. Right, that's a new feature on Instagram. Now let's go and have a look at it rather than trying to find all that information.
Mm-hmm. So one of the phrases I've seen on your website and marketing materials is psychology of choice. Now, this seems like quite a meaty phrase, but could you sort of explain what that means and how that relates to your brands?
Yeah, of course. So I would say psychology of choice is basically the why. So why do people make that choice? And there's no point in taking an insight and saying, oh, these people have made that decision without actually questioning why, what external influences were there, what other things were they doing at the time, etc. And, you know, on an individual basis, this is super difficult because, you know, there's so many individual factors that could be affecting that person online that you just can't identify.
Sure.
However, when you have a critical mass of people, they're all doing the same thing, that lends itself to a trend. And that trend obviously is something that we like to think sets us apart a little, where we actually look at the behaviours of people, the psychology of people, the why behind people, not necessarily on an individual basis, but on that larger critical mass of the collective power of data, basically.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that goes back to your, you know, previous points of, again, not being siloed of this data that you're, you know, creating this data set works actually much better when it's complemented by other research, other data that the brand may have. And so perhaps that opens up more conversations internally and creates more, I guess, more potential of a richer data source plus action from this data.
Exactly. I mean, you can take one of our charity clients, for example. They work with us on appeal campaigns. Mm-hmm. So they're able to track links from their own posts, but it's impossible to see what kind of earned content is also driving the donations and, you know, why people are posting off the back of that. So what we did was we took donation data from Google Analytics and we looked for correlations between post timing and donations. So we'd use social data to identify any earned conversation and we'd look for the correlations between the post timing of that and the Google Analytics donations. And that's quite a very light way of looking at things and drawing a high level conclusion. But then what we then went and did was look at the intent to donate. So we're looking at the kind of conversation where they're saying, I plan to donate, or I'm going to donate, or I have just donated. And we look at the rise in that conversation after influencer posts compared to the donations uptake. And we look at the driving choices behind that. So if they're saying, I just donated because, or, you know, we can see that they've commented on a post that's saying, I'm going to donate, and that post was what drove them to do it. So what we try and do is look at, yep, they said they're donating. They said we can make some correlations between the fact that they donated at this time and this post, but we want to understand what about that post actually made them donate, etc. Now, if they wanted to go even further than that, they can. There's other tools out there. For example, Brandwatch has got a tool called Curiously, where you're able to actually create your own surveys, and they go out to digital consumers. And you can ask those questions. So say we've got all that information and we're like, great, this is really fascinating, but I want to know more. Those people that said that they, you know, that they donated, I want to understand why. Why would these people donate? And I want to go and ask the questions of a digital audience to ask that. So there's three tools there that we've used in tandem. We've used Google Analytics, we've used social listening tools, and we've used an online survey tool. So And all of that gives the end client an understanding of what earned content is driving donations, why it's driving that donations, and kind of the influences that are big in that space to use on future appeals.
Now, you know, as you're, you know, explaining, you know, giving the really clear examples of this in action, it just strikes me of how quick this can all take place, not just with the listening, but also the actions itself. So, you know, you don't have to take actions for the next year's campaign. It seems like you can do it as the campaign is running, of just how quickly you can enact these insights.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny because that particular project that we do a couple of them in the year, it's a daily thing. It's daily reporting, it's daily campaign management, it's morning meetings every day to go through all the insights from the previous day. You know, it's really making sure that you're integrating insights in real time as we go. So there are two kind of flip sides to social listening. You can use it as a daily thing where it's, you know, either feeding into your campaign or managing a crisis, etc. And then it's a long-term thing. So we're doing additional research, taking long-term insights, looking back over historical data and feeding that information into other things and strategies you do within the business.
Sure. Oh, okay. Because I can imagine that even subtle wins can, you know, with this charity example, can mean even more money to go to the good causes.
Yeah, I think, definitely. I think there's a real benefit here for charities to be able to kind of keep on top of their appeals as they go, but also utilize it to increase their donations and their funding. And we've had some great fun doing that with some charities over the last year. I really do think that, you know, as I said earlier, there's a really big benefit to B2C and Not so much to B2B, but we are forgetting the agencies and the charities there that really do some great work with this stuff.
Excellent. Now, I just wanted to sort of take a slight pivot because, you know, as we're recording, we're still in the middle of COVID situation, which has shifted the way, you know, almost everyone works. So could you talk about a bit how lockdown has affected your team and your team's working styles?
Yeah, of course. So I must say we've been very, very lucky. When I set the business up nearly 4 years ago, I set it up as a fully remote business in the first place. It was funny because at the time I really wanted a remote job. I had the dream of traveling and working online in my head. And there just weren't any out there. It was more the pay me £5,000 to learn how to leave your 9-to-5 and you don't actually get anything out of it. There was a lot of scams and stuff. But since obviously COVID and lockdown hit and remote work has become suddenly much more acceptable. So for us, it was actually quite a benefit. We had feedback in the past of people saying, oh, we don't like the fact that you're remote. And that was quite a hindrance. And now that everybody, it's so acceptable, I've not had a single person say that that's potentially an issue. and obviously because we've been doing this for so many years before kind of everything hit the fan with COVID, we were already set up with all the technology, the way that we work with our clients, so that, you know, when it did hit, it wasn't scrambling around trying to find what's the best tech and trying out different conferencing and communication softwares and things like that. We were set up. So, yeah, we were very, very lucky, I think. It hasn't really changed the way that we work with our clients because we've already been working with our clients in that way.
Ah, so quite the pioneer then in remote working.
Potentially, yeah.
Now, I can imagine with workshops, because I guess when I think of workshops, you're sort of stuck in a room, there's pastries on the table, mm-hmm. Post-its. So how have you positioned workshops when it comes to this new remote style working?
It's funny because when I first started doing these, I delivered a workshop and it was with a whiteboard and a marker and a screen share. So it was me standing in the corner with this whiteboard and this marker and people can't really see what I'm writing properly. It was awful. There's loads of software out there that helps you do these kind of workshops online now. But funnily enough, I found the easiest way was just to use an iPad and a pen. Mm. So I don't have an iPad, actually. My partner has an iPad, so I steal his. And, I can just share my screen using the iPad and draw directly on it, write directly on it. We can draw diagrams, etc. So I found the simplest solution is that, obviously not the most cost effective if you want to go and buy an iPad. But if you already have one, that is that for me is the simplest way of doing it.
Yes. No, it's, sometimes we tend to overcomplicate things. Yes. I know. Have you noticed any, I guess, different shifts or trends in conversations of just regular everyday people when it comes to, this remote style working? Have brands sort of picked up on new things that they've are learning from their customers?
Yeah. So in terms of kind of shifts in conversations from customers, I think really at the moment, brands are starting to be held a lot more accountable. Accentuated by the fact you've had some massive, big political or, human rights issues, sure, such as COVID, BLM, the election, you've got masks, you've got Brexit, everything. So it's weird to see that it's now kind of shifted to brands being a lot more accountable, and their kind of previous behavior is coming back to bite them a little bit. People are making, it's very obvious that they're, not doing it. They're doing it for the sake of it, some of them, and it's not very authentic. So in terms of kind of the shifts in conversation, I would say that it's definitely brands are getting judged a lot more online of how they're responding to all of these, I don't even know what to call them, events, I would say, over the past year. And yeah, and if they stay silent, that's almost just as bad. So it's been interesting to see that kind of accountability shift. In terms of working online, I think what this really affected was when you had brands who were Wetherspoons, for example, where you can't have people working online, and you have Unilever, for example, who can work very well online. Now, Wetherspoons did some really, they got rid of all their staff in quite a, destructive way.
Yeah.
Unilever kept all their staff on without having any work available for them. And I know that they are two completely different companies in two completely different industries, but it goes to show how remote work has helped one company over another to be able to just fully, ease into any kind of situation like this. Not that you can serve drinks remotely or anything like that, but it just shows that the kind of companies that are able to shift online, whatever industry that they're in, and provide that remote opportunity, really are the ones that will end up weathering the storm in the long run for anything in the future that might hit us this year. God knows, aliens, who knows? So
now with, I guess, brands who are coming to you who are perhaps new to, social listening or adopting a consumer-led strategy, are there, common concerns that they have of going with this route? And if so, how do you sort of help them, overcome these initial concerns?
I think it's funny because once people see what it can do, and there's not much concern because they can see the value. But yeah, initially getting them to understand what that value is and how it seems like quite a big, overwhelming thing initially. And you're like, right, you're going to make sure that all your strategies are fed by all this data, and we need to do all this research, and then we need to do this brainstorm workshop. And it sounds a bit overwhelming at first. But actually, I mean, we've done this so many times that it's a really simple, structured way of doing things. And it doesn't have to be this, overarching, we must have everything filtered by consumer insights. Not everything lends itself to be strategized around consumer insights. But when it comes down to, making key decisions in your company that affect your customers, affect your audience, and affect the wider industry, then you need to have that information. You need to be informed in advance. So I think once they understand that it's not absolutely everything in your business needs to suddenly be consumer led and all of this, it's like, take those baby steps, yeah. take the first step with one strategy, work out how that best works for you, develop a framework for actually integrating it into the wider business, and then you can take baby steps into other, or let's have a look at how insights can work with our PR team. Let's have a look at, we've been doing them with the marketing. Let's take this out to our product team. And so it doesn't have to be like this full-blown implementation of everybody in the whole business starts using it immediately. It just needs to be that taking that first step and seeing that value come back and then realizing and thinking about all the possibilities that you can then do with that further on. So we just kind of put their mind at ease by not going too fast. We just take it at the pace of the company and where their goals are and where they want to be and achieve in a certain timeline.
Yes. No, I think, I find that slowly, slowly approach of, one team sort of being the initial pioneer, but then other teams seeing, oh, what is that team going on? What can, how can I get that info as well? And sort of creating that, that internal, curiosity to learn more about the insights and the consumer led strategy.
Exactly, spot on.
So what are the big goals for you and Ten Bear Group for the rest of 2020 and perhaps next year as well?
We've actually taken the stance kind of since COVID, really, that we want to do some stuff around the idea of giving back. So we've got some things in the works at the moment. And what these things are is that the idea is that there's a lot out there that doesn't actually help analysts in their day-to-day role. There's a lot of webinars out there that are learn how this company did X, etc. So what we're trying to do is our goal this year and into next is to be able to develop tools or services and hints and tips, etc., that really help the people actually doing the work. So, you know, it's all well and good speaking to, you know, the executive about the longer term strategy, but we also want to make sure that the people actually doing the work are having the ability to do it in the best possible way. They're understanding their best practices. They're understanding some different ways of writing queries and setting up all the dashboards and stuff. So, yeah, our goal for the next year or so is to ensure that we're giving back and providing some really key resources for people in our industry.
Fantastic. So we are, I guess, almost out of time. But before we leave, I just have a few quickfire questions that I wanted to run by you. These are questions that I ask all of our guests to the podcast. So the first one is, what is the last thing you recommended to a friend or family member?
Interesting. Have you seen the TV show Dark? It's on Netflix.
No, I've seen it on my you know, when I turn Netflix on, but I haven't watched it yet.
Oh my god, I love it. I really, really recommend to anybody who likes intricate mystery kind of TV programs. I've recommended it to a lot of my family and friends. And yeah, that's my top recommendation for TV shows at the moment. Definitely Dark.
Well, another show to add to the watch list then.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So, next question, what are you a fan of that might surprise most people?
This is a little bit embarrassing, but I am a massive fan of gravy, and I don't mean like I just like gravy. I am a big fan of gravy. If I didn't start this business, I wanted to start a restaurant called The Gravy Train. I feel like this still needs to happen. I feel like people are missing out on this gravy train experience, but yeah, that's a fun fact not many people know.
No, it could be the next hipster restaurant. We've had cereal,
these. Well, gravy dipping. Who doesn't want that? It's amazing. So, maybe that's just a personal preference.
When I used to live in the States, my family lived in the sort of the American South, and one of the big, you know, big food trends was chicken fried steak with white gravy. And when I try to explain that here, people don't really to understand what that is about. But I'm sure you,
that as a delicious. Not gonna lie, I'm a big food fan.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that new pop-up restaurant your food truck near you then.
Yes, exactly.
So final question, if people want to get in contact with you, what is the best way?
I would say I'm always on LinkedIn. That's the easiest way, probably. Just shoot me a message on LinkedIn, or just jump on our website, get in contact with us on one of the forms, or you can give us a call, or contact us on Twitter. we've got many ways in which you can contact us. So yeah, for me personally, if you want to get in touch, please just shoot me a message on LinkedIn. I spend a lot of time just scrolling through LinkedIn, to be fair.
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you, Jess, again for joining me today on the podcast.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Peter.
Now, if you want to follow Distillery on our socials, we are at We Are Distillery. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to welcoming you again soon.